Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we will be speaking to Catherine DiNapoli, who is the writer of a new film called Untitled, which is opening tomorrow at the Center for Contemporary Arts. Right now, I would like to welcome Martin Back, Phil Mantione, and Red Cell. Phil is a composer, musician, an installation and multimedia artist. Martin is a composer, video sound artist, and drummer. And Red Cell is a musician, and he's a director of a group called The Process, which is a non-for-profit that takes its cues from Gertrude Stein's salons of the 1910s and 20s. And they will be performing at the Move-In Gallery starting tomorrow, Friday. There's a reception at the Move-In Gallery on the College of Santa Fe campus from 5 to 8 in the afternoon, and the piece is called Atmosphere Evolute, Evolving Weather Music. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Thank you.
So let's talk about this weather music event that is going to be happening starting tomorrow night, and it's actually going on through the 11th of December, so people can come in and see it, and because it's a time-based evolutionary piece,
That's right.
It probably bears repeating. How does this musical piece work?
The musical piece works taking both live data from sensors that are outside, feeding it into a computer, Maximus P-Patch.
Now, we're talking weather data.
Weather data. So, light, humidity, and we've got temperature is the other one.
Atmospheric pressure?
Very difficult to do.
Okay.
Yeah, without spending a lot of money. Some of that data is coming into a computer that's in the gallery space. Some of it is being used as a sound signal. Some of it's being used as control parameters. So it'll be both. You can hear the sensors, and the sensors will also be controlling parameters of the sound that are going on in the space. We also have data that's being used in a fixed manner, comet data over time. Is that right, Phil?
Comet?
Some of the things that
the
you...
The text you're talking about?
Or yeah, for the text.
Yeah, the text, it's basically involving people reading numbers, of a female voice and a male voice. And they're just... It's kind of a random, sparse recitation of numbers.
Do the numbers signify anything in particular?
I think they relate to this kind of underlying concept that's emerged as this piece has evolved from where we started, and dealing with the idea of measurement and trying to quantify our environment and not really succeeding. So the thing about the way the sensors are being used, it's not truly a one-to-one relationship between, okay, the temperature goes up a degree and you hear this immediate sound. It's the three sensors are actually being coalesced into one signal, which is then, it's sort of the way that we perceive the world, where we see things, we smell things, we hear things, we think things all together, and it's not really one thing at a time, so it's kind of what's
so
happening.
So unless we actually consciously analyze things, we experience them in an integrated way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so the piece, so what kind of sounds are actually made? I mean, are we going to hear flutes and harpsichords and things?
No, not at all. A lot of it is very electronic sounding, drones, synth sounds. I'm very much in love with just raw sine waves, sawtooth waves, you know, the basics of electronic synthesis that, you know, going back 40, 50 years when the first modular synths were being made.
Do you have any music of that kind that we could play for people to, when you say sine waves, sawtooth waves?
Actually, but this piece here that I have is
that electric?
All sine waves.
Oh,
okay, so we'll put in a little sample of that, and people can hear it. That's an example of a sine wave sound from a piece by Martin Back called Arboretum.
But also in the middle of the space, suspended in the center, is an electronic Aeolian harp, which we built. And it's actually not truly an Aeolian harp, because the Aeolian harp is designed to be wind-activated. And this is an idea that Martin had in the beginning of the piece and kind of went a different direction, but it's a long instrument that has about a 30-inch span of strings stretched across it, 12 strings, activated by a vibrating motor that causes the strings to vibrate according to the laws of harmonics in Pythagoras. And that is that the audio from that harp is also being fed in along with the weather data, so those are also being combined to create. So there's acoustic sounds as well as electronic sounds and the voices.
So as you've had it set up so far, how much variation is there? So for example, when you go in, and let's say you've been in there for a while and you've been isolated from the outside, can you tell what the weather is like from your own piece?
You might be able to if you spent maybe a full day with it. But I think the time, I think we've intentionally distorted the time and really tried to integrate all of those things so that it's a very subtle experience and not, you know, I think there's a tendency using sensors to have this sort of
one-to-one.
Yeah, one-to-one, rapid-fire, kind of stadium rock kind of approach where everything is, you know, instantaneous response, instantaneous gratification. We don't want to do that because it's just not, it gets so very old so very quickly.
Well, it's not the way that weather actually occurs either. I mean, if you were to go in the afternoon and then return in the evening, I think there would be a noticeable difference. But you'd have to stay there quite a while to, and it would be such a gradual change that you probably wouldn't hear the weather as such.
So the aesthetic in which, for example, computer sounds are made into music or considered music, or sounds of the wind blowing through strings or the various things that you've mentioned, what are the aesthetic and musical roots of that kind of music / sound art?
Well, the Aeolian harp goes back all the way to the Greeks, the ancient Greeks. And I've been doing a lot of research on Aeolian instruments that I'm using in my work. And I found that I think it was in ancient Celtic cultures they would put Aeolian harps at sacred sites. So it's a very, very old tradition.
So help me out here. The Aeolian harp is not meant to be played by a person?
That's right. Correct. It's meant to be played by the wind. And what's so interesting about the wind playing a string is that you can get two or three harmonics on one string, which you can't do by playing it because there's a certain amount of friction involved. And with the wind, it's continuous and it's activating different parts of the string. And it's a very beautiful, beautiful sound.
That's so interesting. So really what you are doing goes back millennia in some ways.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Using the weather to make your music.
It's using emerging technology.
Right.
You know, sort of combining
to
everything.
To do the same spiritual thing.
And so, whereas, of course, the computer aspect of it is as old as computers or as old as musicians have gotten their hands on computers. And that is an aesthetic that I often wonder whether the people who do it aren't the people who love it the most. And those of us who are outside of it sort of wonder, how is this different from listening to the static on the bottom of the FM dial?
Well, Cage did that already. So.
That's right.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, with John Cage, he was, before computers, he was using a lot of electronic sounds, David Tudor, and even before them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, but as a composer, you know, that people say, well, how do you write for computer? And I think you write for computer the same way you write for anything that makes sound. It's just that the computer has certain capabilities that a violin doesn't have. But they each have their own voice, you know, and the computer can have several voices. That's what's interesting about everyone that uses it differently.
How do you, when people are new to this kind of music, how do you get them into the frame of mind to really appreciate it and get themselves into it?
That's difficult. I think that you can give someone only so much sort of background or aesthetic background to prepare them for what they're going to experience. But really, what I found is that people have to come in to it disregarding, say, their notions of what is familiar in listening to music. Because I think that's often the trap that we get into. We get into the familiar. I get into it even with listening to very crazy things. And so then I go back to, say, very simple folk music or very simple world music to unfamiliarize myself, to refamiliarize myself. So I think it depends on the individual listener to
I think
just be receptive to it.
A lot of it has to do with the level of awareness that the listener is willing to give to something. I find that with music like this, it the more awareness you're willing to give it, the more it raises your awareness of the world around you. And so you find that people who are interested in these things will find these things in the world around them as well. So if you've ever found yourself saying, like, oh, that tea kettle's making a beautiful sound or something like that, then this music is definitely for you. But I think it can work in the reverse way as well. Mm. It's like you can hear something like this, and then you'll go home and listen to your house and
right.
hear what's around you and hear some of the beauty that is there.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's so many, I think, if you really think about it, there are so many ways that people listen to music and listen to sound anyway. If you go to the Lensic, you sit with your hands folded and listen quietly and try not to cough except at the break. If you go to a dance event, you listen with your body and let it move your body. If you go listen to the ocean, you sort of walk on the beach or whatever. So we have so many different modes mm-hmm. Already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think there's also a lot of, I think familiarity is really a big point there. Because when people hear things, the more they hear them, the more comfortable they are with them. And the more they want to hear more and maybe go a little farther.
Right.
So, you know, there's in popular music, you see a lot of bleed over for more experimental music being, you know, integrated.
Really?
Slowly.
What's an example?
Well,
of
I mean...
that?
Sampling, you know, rap musicians,
sampling.
The whole sampling
Absolutely.
Idea. I mean, this is, it was started, I don't know when it was, when
Pierre
you'd say
Schaefer
it was started.
In the 30s, with
mm-hmm.
Musique Concrète, doing it on these huge, you know, arcane turntable systems,
right.
recording sounds and then remanipulating them. So sampling is...
And of course, film. Film.
Absolutely.
You know,
film.
All the sound you hear in film is, that comes from those people that write that music. Have an awareness. I mean, usually
even Foley effects is a kind of sampling, just
right.
a very specific sort of sampling.
Yeah, Foley. Probably not everybody knows this, but the sound that you hear, besides the people talking, the voices, but all the other sounds you hear in movies when something falls to the ground or you know, people going down the stairs, that's not the sound of people going down the stairs. That's some guy with in a sound studio with. Shoes
right.
and a piece of wood going clop, 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 and every single sound in the right. movies is mm-hmm. like that.
Well, what I'm doing right now with a group that Martin and I are in called the Transducers is I'm using a lot of Foley effects in that context, in the context of writing music and improvising music. And I mean, just the quality of the sounds are just so stellar. And these are many of the sounds I've got from the site I haven't recorded myself. I've actually gotten from a site called freesound.org. Which is just an enormous bank of beautiful Foley effects and ambient sounds and field recordings and just a lot of different things. A lot of things I've recorded myself, but there are certain things that are just so well done that why not use them? To me, it's just like, you know, the sound of a glass breaking that's just so crystal clear, 96K, you know, 24-bit, beautiful glass breaking. Can't help but use it. You know, I have it set up so that I can improvise with these sounds live.
We're talking to Phil Montione, Martin Back, and Red Cell. The event is called Atmosphere Evolute Evolving Weather Music. The reception is tomorrow from 5 to 8 at the Move-In Gallery at the College of Santa Fe, and it runs through the 12th and the 11th of December. Red Cell, tell us more about the process. That's your not-for-profit group that's producing all kinds of things that Santa Fe I don't think has really seen before.
Yes, we're trying to bring some of the outside world here to Santa Fe. We just had a show on Friday night with Martin played in, and I did as well with my band The Vivisect. That was a 5th death anniversary tribute to John Balance of Coil, who had died exactly 5 years to the day earlier, and we had everything from... Martin, talk about your piece for a second.
I did a tribute to a Coil piece called Time Machines that's, again, Would you say it's a kind of an anomaly in their catalog, Red?
Yes.
Yeah. It's analog synth drone music, which there are many practitioners of drone music, contemporary, going back 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And I did this tribute to this. Actually, it's a whole double album,
mm-hmm.
and I tried to condense that the essence of that into the piece that I did. And I used an electrocardiogram machine that I had sort of rigged up to produce sound. I mean, it produces sound, but doesn't really produce them in the way that wasn't intended to produce them in the way that I've been using it.
Do you have it connect up to a person?
No, that's coming soon. I'll be wiring my brain up.
How did you have it make? Did you have it make heart sounds another way?
No. There's a audio feedback loop running through it. Very complex audio feedback loop. So I can get all these very beautiful tones and textures and rhythms.
It was beautiful to see this huge ECG machine and Martin there, you know, playing with all the dials, and it was making the most beautiful tones and things. But in that show, we had everything from punk to folk music to things like the ECG machine to
poetry.
Video, spoken word. So we're attempting to harness some of this incredible talent that you see in this town and focus it on specific things. And so there's such a loose feeling to a lot of the art here in town to me. Like there's so many amazing musicians with no outlets.
Right.
And so I think by bringing a lot of these interesting people together, you get a lot more of attention.
Now you're bringing people together who are here. You're also bringing some people in from the outside.
Yes. We've had people from all over the world come and play. We do a lot of shows in houses, in living rooms. We also do them, obviously, in art galleries and non-traditional places, and places that have a warmth and a sincerity to them is what I'm looking for. Instead of like, hey, I'm here to be entertained kind of a venue,
right.
It's more I'm here to experience something.
Isn't that interesting? There's sort of a participatory quality mm-hmm. to the audience in the way you put it.
And that's a big part of like what Gertrude Stein did in the 10s and 20s. She would basically force her friends to do stuff for each other in her living room. And we liked that.
So she had all these talented friends, and she'd say, you're coming here on Thursday night.
Come show us what you're working on. Come perform this.
Right.
Come paint live for these people who are going to be drinking coffee and watching it. You know, we liked that idea. A less formal idea. So.
I'm going to ask you guys a question that I'm also going to ask the people in the next segment talking about this movie, Untitled, which addresses all these themes of avant-garde art. But there is a kind of reference to this idea that, if you don't understand my art, well, they didn't understand the Impressionists at the time either, and they didn't understand Stravinsky. Are we in the same kind of moment that, you know, 50 years from now people will fully understand what you guys are doing, or is the whole avant-garde thing shifted? Is it a whole different can of worms, so to speak?
I think it's very different because there is no classifiable or quantifiable avant-garde anymore. Avant-garde really refers to not only a practice, but within the context of art history, groups. So the Futurists, the Dadaists, Fluxus. Because really, we're sort of in a moment where we have an underground of undergrounds. There's no real one or two or five groups operating with a manifesto. It's really a lot of different people coming together who may not have practically the same interests, but who have the same interest in, you know, pushing the boundaries of art, pushing the boundaries of music, pushing the boundaries of performance. So I think that's kind of what the state that we're in today, and I think it's actually getting a little bit harder. People that are doing crazier things are getting even more marginalized.
A lot of the avant-garde was in direct opposition to the state of things.
Absolutely.
As well. And you find that now, but on a smaller scale, I think.
Smaller scale, like, and then now those radical ideas get co-opted much faster.
Exactly.
Which is very difficult to
exactly.
deal with.
Well, I also wonder what boundaries are left to push, because I think the avant-garde changed the aesthetic of the art world and the public such that we're basically supposed to accept and be open to everything. So what boundaries are left?
That's a good question.
I think there's quite a few boundaries still left, particularly in music.
Well, I think there's a lot of boundaries that are in music, in the academic world, mm-hmm. That still exist. And, you know, one of the refreshing things that I found out, because I, even though I started as a jazz player, I have gone through that whole academic music, you know, traditional music composition type of idea. And working with Martin, and it's very rare, I think, for two composers to be able to work together. In fact, I don't think I've ever done it before, really, outside the context of a group, you know, but as real collaborators. And I think one of the reasons is because Martin's coming from a totally different perspective than I am, from more of a visual arts background. And he's bringing this whole other energy to sound that I just find very attractive. And it appeals to, we have a similar aesthetic. And I don't know, I'm very turned off by academia usually when it comes to music. It's just so dry, and you know, they walk around with patches on their elbows, you know. And
tweed.
I know, they're very...
Wait, those cliches are still alive?
Oh yeah.
They're still there. And you always have, this is radio so you can't see the pose, but this is the typical composer pose, you know, the portrait.
His chin is nestled between his thumb and forefinger. His head is tilted to the side.
Chewing on his glasses.
And now he's chewing on the thumb, the end of his glasses. Okay.
So, there's a schism there, I think, in music anyway. I don't know if there's a parallel in the visual arts, but it's certainly in music, and it's always frustrated me. So, you know, I'm always looking for alternatives. And getting back to Stravinsky, a lot of people still don't understand Stravinsky, so I don't think we've even gotten past, you know, that.
Yeah, I mean, understanding is one thing, but kind of accepting and allowing it. I went to the Ballet Russe, the Kirov performance the other night. Oh, it's all Stravinsky program. I don't understand. I can tell you about Stravinsky, but I accept it and sometimes love it, whereas people stomped out of the theater in a rage when they first heard that music, mm-hmm. The Rite of Spring and all that. Mm-hmm.
Caused a riot.
I think a lot of people in the art world are really, you know, obsessed with what's next, where can we go now, what's new, what's exciting. And I think art doesn't have to do that. It can just exist, and people who are honest with their art and honest with their expression make interesting things that attract interesting people. Mm-hmm. And I don't
That's
think
really
it has to
point.
Go anywhere. I think it just is. And only time will tell what it was,
right.
You know. So I think people are really obsessed with that, and it's not necessarily a healthful way of looking at things.
Well, I suppose each artist is attracted to a certain form,
of course.
Which may not be anything new.
I'm sure. Even talking about myself. You know, I took over the move-in gallery for David Stout. He, when the College of Santa Fe closed, he moved on and is now teaching at the University of North Texas. And I wanted to keep his gallery alive, which was based in new media and actually time-based works, which they hadn't really, we haven't really mm-hmm. explored until now. But we deal so heavily with technology in our gallery that we're always looking for the emerging technologies and what's new and what's interesting that's new. But I think that I know as a curator, I want to find not just what's new, but what's being done that's interesting with what's new. So it doesn't
exactly.
just... Yeah, exactly. So I really want to focus in the gallery on things like what Martin and Phil are doing.
So tell us about the Ancestral Grown Liberation Orchestra, including the title of the band, or orchestra.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think I formed this group about 18 months ago. And I wanted a group of musicians. I know a group of musicians in town, including Phil, that are sort of the whole range of musicianship that you can ask for. Highly trained and highly skilled. Highly skilled but untrained. Phil is what he called, you know, pen and paper composer, although that's not all that he does, of course. There's a guy in the group that played in punk bands in L.A. for years and years and years. Myself, I've been a musician my entire life, but have no formal training, really.
So how do you put it all together?
Well, that was exactly the thing. And I wanted a group of musicians that expressed a kind of raw interest in just music, in whatever kind of music. And really at the focus, we've been doing a lot of graphic scores, which are very, very unorthodox methods for making music. Some of them are pretty specific. Some of them very open. A lot of them are almost like guided improvisations. So improvisations that have a certain set of rules, but that can be very, very open. Have we really done anything that's been really specific?
Totally fixed?
Not really.
No, not really.
Everything's been...
There's some kind of improvisation involved in pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy playing with this group because it's... because of the diversity of the members, and you know, that it's unique to have a respect for sound and also a kind of built-in humor, and I think we achieved that. Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing that says you have to sit there quietly and listen and be changed in some, you know.
That's right.
There's nothing wrong with that, but there's another part to playing music and to being involved that I think has been brought back for me, because I've been kind of not in that circle for a while.
And playing music can be so beautifully anarchic as both a performer and as an audience. And I think Phil's right. We're so often so forced to just sit there and just receive and fold our hands, you know. And in contemporary classical music, you know, Mozart or Beethoven, not that there's anything wrong with that, people go there. Really, what's the saying? Wealthy people going to witness other people's wealth, or privileged people going to
now
witness
wait
other
a minute.
People's
I
privilege.
Love Beethoven.
I do too, but I'm not going to go. I'd rather listen to it at home and have my own experience. I'm not going to go to a concert hall and receive it, even though that's a majestic and wonderful experience.
And the other thing about this is that there's so many ways to make sound. You know, I'm a guitarist by training, but I think I brought my guitar in the beginning and you know, was using that, and then I brought the computer, mm-hmm. was using that. But you know, everyone else is bringing all kinds of like little toys, a theremin.
A theremin,
actual theremin, which Sam plays. He's a virtuoso.
Sam plays sometimes. Yeah.
Theremin is, just so people know, it's sort of the high tone in Star Trek and in Good Vibrations
right.
by
right.
the Beach Boys.
That's right.
Yeah.
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 Kind of sound. Yeah.
So, what I'll be playing Friday is actually it's a piece of hacked electronics. I call it the human resistor, and it's made from two intercoms, the guts of two intercoms, a toy keyboard, and an answering machine. And I have them, and I just basically randomly wired all these things together, and then I stuck a copper pipe and stuck that in the middle, and I wired that in, and I just basically, I moistened my hand. First I plug it in, and then I moisten my hands, and I just start grabbing the electronics, and I become a resistor within the circuit.
Nice.
And it's actually a controllable instrument. I'm mm-hmm. pretty.
It makes
I'm getting
awesome
better
sounds.
At it. I'm getting better at it. But anyway, there's no limit as to what you can play That's in right. this group, which is one of the attractive things.
Phil Montione and Martin Back are in this group, the Ancestral Grown Liberation Orchestra, which is going to be playing at the reception tomorrow, Friday, November 20th, from 5 to 8 in the evening in a show called, it's the beginning of a show called Atmosphere Evolute, Evolving Weather Music. Are you going to turn off the weather music while the Ancestral Grown is playing?
Different rooms. Yeah. Different
oh, okay.
Rooms.
And Red Cell is a musician, and he's the director of The Process, which is putting all of this stuff on at the Move-In Gallery. And if you want more information, is there any...
Please contact us at theprocessinsantafe@gmail.com. You can also call me at 982-0389. And we have a lot of other things in the works. Or if you're interested in being involved with any of this, there's so many opportunities in this town for people who are interested not only in the avant-garde, but in unusual and unique art and music.
Phil, Martin, and Red, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to hear some music. And that was an excerpt from Chant by Phil Montione, and that's computer music based on field recordings in New York City of war protests after 9/11 and the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm happy now to welcome Catherine DiNapoli. She is co-writer and producer of the film Untitled, which opens at the Center for Contemporary Arts tomorrow, Friday. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
So this is a very interesting film about a successful painter, his extremely unsuccessful brother, who's kind of a tortured composer, and a young, beautiful New York gallery owner who gives them both various kinds of opportunities. And it's a kind of a satire of an art world that's driven by language and concepts that sometimes seem like total bull, but it's not totally satire either. What was your motivation for writing this film?
Well, we really enjoy going to galleries and are kind of a part of the art scene a little bit. Jonathan, Parker, the director's son, actually studied art at NYU, and his parents are art collectors. And I myself am somewhat of an artist, so just a really kind of a fun subject for us. And also we went to some new music concerts that were very similar to the first concert in the film. So that was kind of the inspiration for that. And they actually played one of David Lang's pieces. David Lang was our composer. And there were three people standing on stage. There was a clarinetist in the middle making these guttural noises and these two huge drums on either side. So anyway, we wanted to kind of marry those two subjects.
It is interesting that if you're going to make a film, a narrative film, full of fictitious contemporary art and music, you have to have an artist and a composer helping you. I mean, how did you approach that task?
Well, we wanted all of the art to have, integrity, even though it was, art that was fictional, and the music as well. Kyle Ng did a lot of the taxidermy art, and he's a young guy, like 22 years old, this artist from L.A., and I had met him and thought, we thought he would be a really great guy to make some of the work. And when we visited his house, he had all of this taxidermy everywhere, and he was really into doing taxidermy art. And then he even took us on a studio visit to this garage where there was this guy was doing taxidermy work, and these dogs would come by from the neighborhood and bark. And anyway, it was just kind of a like Silence of the Lambs scene. It was pretty interesting. So Kyle did a lot of the art, and then Jonathan's son, who's studying at NYU, came up with some of the concepts that then Kyle actually made. And then as far as the music goes, David Lang is our composer. He actually won the Pulitzer Prize last year. He's just a really amazing composer. And the director, Jonathan Parker, knew David from his days at Stanford. And David, we had asked to just do the score, but he actually had a lot of fun doing, kind of the other music as well, the kind of crazy pouring water, bucket-kicking type music. So we also are releasing the soundtrack, which I think is a really great album.
I mean, it is hilarious. The guy, you're sitting there and this watching the film, and there's a tiny audience of people watching a man very seriously put a chain into a bucket and then kick the bucket. And, and you're watching and going, can anybody take this seriously? And what about you as the filmmakers? I mean, to what extent did you say this is laughable versus this is really serious and to be taken seriously?
Well, that's what's so funny about it. When you go to a new music concert, the people there do take it extremely seriously. The musicians and the people in the audience, who many times are composers themselves or of that genre. And to us, it was very funny, but to have, to laugh at such a performance would be unheard of. So we very much love the music, but there is a comic aspect as well.
As I was watching it, I felt like the comic aspect boiled down to basically a pretty strong critique of the followers of John Cage, if not John Cage himself. What is your own relationship to, or your feeling about that aesthetic of, for example, having a piece which has no sound at all and just listening to the sounds in the room, or having the sounds be made by the most pedestrian objects?
What is my feeling about it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, going back to the days of studying classical music, I remember a girl at a piano recital doing just that. So definitely, you know, it's a concept.
So it also, I mean, again, it's funny because right before you just now, we had on the air three musicians who are local sound artists who do all sorts of things with computers. And I asked them the same thing that I wanted to ask you, which is, there's a kind of art cliche that goes like this: if you don't understand my work, that means it's way ahead of its time, just like the people didn't understand the Impressionists or Stravinsky in their time. Which, of course, anybody can say, no matter how good or bad their work is. And how do you feel about the avant-garde as it exists today? Is it analogous to that time 100 years ago when people were stomping out of the theater?
Well, it's a question: will time ever catch up? If you're ahead of its time, will it catch up? You know, I very much enjoy avant-garde music, and I'm sure I would have enjoyed it 100 years ago as well. But I do think you know, David Lang is coming up with some very, very new concepts too. As far as presenting it in a film, you know, you kind of have to, just so everybody gets it, in a way, you kind of need to make it something that everyone can relate to rather than some kind of, you know, total minutia that no one's ever heard of. So I think going back to the silent concert, which may have been something that was done a long time ago, I think people can relate to that. If you do something that's just so weird, sometimes it's too weird, and people might not be able to kind of relate to that.
There are wonderful actors in the film, Marley Shelton and Adam Goldberg. And how did you? What was the process of casting this film?
So this film is a low-budget film, and basically, in the beginning, I was just writing offers and calling agents and making firm offers. And basically what happens is we don't audition kind of name actors. They just have to really relate to the script and want to do it because they're not getting paid a ton of money. So Adam Goldberg was the first person we thought of for the role of Adrian Jacobs, and he just loved the script, and he was the first person to come on board. And once we had Adam attached, things got easier. He actually recommended that we get Marley Shelton, and that just kind of made it a viable project when you have an actor attached. Later on, we got a really great casting director on board, Diana Brigitte, and she helped get a lot of the other cast.
Adam Goldberg plays the brooding and tortured artist so beautifully. I don't think the scowl ever leaves his face practically the whole movie.
Yeah, I remember just going through these you know, pictures that are on IMDb online, trying to figure out who to cast, and he had this just scowl from all these photos that he was doing press for us if he had a bad day or what, but it was just really great, and it totally fit the character. So that was actually a big help in casting.
How do you go about doing a low-budget film of this nature? I mean, it certainly had excellent production values.
Yeah, we really tried to get as much value as we could out of every single dollar. I made sure on this production to sign every single check, and we really, you know, kind of managed it carefully. And then we had some private investors. I think that's the only way that a film like this will get made, because it is so kind of the opposite of what a studio would fund. It's definitely not exactly a, you know, genre picture.
Have you gotten much response to it yet? Has it opened in New York?
Oh, yeah. We've gotten really great reviews, and the New York Times, the LA Times, Ebert, and we opened it at the Angelica in New York. and we opened in L.A., and now I think it's moved to the Beverly Center in L.A., and San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago. So we're having some really great response. We're pleased.
Have you talked to or heard the response from any gallery owners and artists and musicians who have seen it? I mean, there is some kind of looking in the mirror that must happen when certain people see this film.
Yeah, for the most part, the artists really love it, and I think they can kind of laugh at themselves. And the couple of gallery owners that we're friends with really like it in L.A., and I'm sure that some people, you know, take their work seriously and think that we are, you know, maybe making fun of it, but I'm hoping that people can kind of see it with a comic light. We played at the Carmel Film Festival, and there are all these artists there, and they just seemed really genuinely moved, so that was kind of cool.
Catherine DiNapoli is the co-writer and producer of the film Untitled, which once again opens at the Center for Contemporary Arts, the CCA, tomorrow, Friday. And you can find more about that from ccasantafe.org or call 505-982-1338. Catherine, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we're going to play a little clip from the film.
So what'd you think?
It's young, forward, drinkable.
About the concert.
I like a melody.
Can't you give us any meaningful feedback?
All right. Why don't you try composing something with more emotion?
Why?
So you can find an audience.
And how big should my audience be, Josh? One, 10, a million? Is a million enough?
Is the marketplace the measure of our culture?
That would mean the death of all thought.
Lighten up, Adrian.
Lightening up is not an emotion.
Josh has a point. Sometimes you hide behind intellectual mannerisms.
I mean, this is not popular music. Why does everybody think they're an expert? It's like hearing a lecture on nuclear physics and saying, like, nah, I didn't really like it.
I'm still shaking from the bucket kicks. They cut straight through me. Is it a death knell? A call to manual labor? Add the clarinet overtones and it's a striking effect. The chain drop. Human passion unchained. The kind that takes us right to the edge.
You got a good woman there, Joshy.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Thanks to Mary Lynn LeBlanc for her engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz features telephone interviews with George Cunningham of the Faux Frenchum and Anat Cohen, who will be in Santa Fe on Friday evening.